Hello and welcome to the first episode of Education in Focus podcast from Adoption Focus, a space to delve into all things school and education related. My name is Lee and I'm the training manager at Adoption Focus. The education of our children is a real passion of mine, and so it's a privilege for me to be joined by two of our education experts here at Adoption Focus, Jason Gilman-Hughes and Lisa Biggs. Jason is our wonderful education advisor, and your background is primary education, isn't it, Jason?
It is, yes. I always try and think back to how long I've been doing that job, and I was in schools for about 25 years, which is a scary thought when you think about it. It's a quarter of a century. Time flies by so quick, doesn't it? But yeah, I taught in a lot of different schools, in sometimes city schools, sometimes in a more rural setting, deprived and sometimes ethnically diverse, sometimes not. You know, it's fascinating to try and work in different places. And over that time, I did different jobs. I took on responsibilities like Senko for a while, which I found fascinating, really good learning experience. And then moved on to deputy headship and then eventually a head teacher for my sins. So, you know, and all that time, I had a real interest in the sort of needs of children who've been in care, either adopted children or still in care, looked after. And then sort of more recently, in sort of last 5 years or so, I've been a foster parent, and that's taken more of my time and energy over the more recent years, which is one of the reasons I don't do headship either at the same time, because you can't really. And so, yeah, I think it's interesting now that I've got that foot in both camps. I've got a sort of sense of what it feels like from inside a school, and it's also what it's like for a parent looking after a child who's been through a very difficult early start in life.
Brilliant. Thanks, Jason. Our second expert is Lisa. And Lisa is part of the training team here at Adoption Focus, supporting our adopters to navigate their journey. Your experience is as a secondary school teacher, isn't it, Lisa?
It is, yeah. So I worked in secondary schools for about 13 years as a maths teacher, which meant I was probably never the most popular of teachers. and it's just been really interesting, I think, reflecting on it since I've made this transition into adoption support and training, because if I'm honest, during the time I was teaching, I was probably not aware of the needs of children who'd had a difficult start in their lives. You know, I wasn't very trauma informed. I didn't really have a great awareness of attachment. I was just bumbling along, focusing on academic progress and that aspect of it. But since adopting my daughter in 2019, and since making this transition here, I am starting to reflect on my teaching career a little bit and see how, you know, schools do have the best interests of children at their core, but are sometimes really approaching it from a very different starting place as we are as parents. So yeah, it's been very interesting doing that reflection.
Thanks, Lisa. So just for you listeners, within Education in Focus, we will explore a range of topics and we would really welcome your suggestions, questions and contributions. So please feel free to drop us an email at education@adoption-focus.org.uk. We would love to hear your experiences. If you fancy joining us on the podcast, you're more than welcome. So thinking of homework, Jason, can you give us some background to where it all came from?
I think homework's been one of those parts of education that's been in schools practice for donkey's years. I think every generation will think back to the fact they had homework before that. So I don't know where it actually started from, if I'm honest. But it's supposed to be something that people expect or have expected to have and to provide. But I think it's over the more recent years, people have started to reflect a bit more on that and think, well, is this actually something that is helpful? Is it something that really makes a difference to children? Is it helping their learning? And there's a lot of questions that schools ask themselves, and certainly did when I was there, and still do. And the guidance has also changed a lot. So one of the things that this head of this podcast was to have a bit of a read around what the guidance says or what the evidence is around homework, because I think it's quite fascinating. Before I do that, I thought I was going to talk about, you know, from a personal point of view, I remember in school, there's this real tension between trying to get homework right, and you never feel you quite did it. There's always this section of parents that wanted more. They'd be asking for more homework for their children, could send more work that's not challenging enough, etc. Then you get other people say, please can you stop sending so much homework? It's too much for my children, they can't manage it. And so you have to try and juggle those sort of competing views. And for a while, it was a quite core part of what Ofsted inspected schools on, you know, a small part of it, but it was there. One of the things I was going to say is that over the recent years, Ofsted have taken that out of the inspection. And also, moving on to the sort of wider guidance, the DfE have removed their guidance as well from homework. It's okay. Really sort of taken, removed quite a lot in the sort of last 3 years or so. But I noticed that quite a lot of schools still seem to follow the old guidance, don't they?
Yeah, I was going to say that's true for secondary as well, because the DfE teacher standards state that teachers should set homework and plan other out-of-class activities to consolidate and extend the knowledge and understanding pupils have acquired. So teachers have it in their standards to do this. However, the DfE have also removed it from their guidance for secondary schools, and Ofsted say that there is no expectation to set any homework, but anything that is set should be in line with the needs and abilities of the pupils. So it is quite contradictory. You know, we expect to see it and teachers are told to do it, yet it's not necessarily a statutory requirement to do. So, yeah, it's a bit of a tightrope that you're walking, isn't it? So.
It is, definitely. It's tricky. And I suppose the teacher standards are getting over 10 years old now, so it may be that they need revising in the light of the guides around homework. But it means that schools are having to make that decision for themselves about whether or how where they do have homework. I think if they stick the neck out and actually say, no, we're not doing any, which I suppose is quite still an outlier. Or are they going to have a policy that they write that outlines how they're going to approach homework and why it's there? And I think for parents, I was going to say, when we talk about this a bit further, that's probably where I'd start from. If you want to know more about homework, a specific thing, I'd see what the school's policy is, find out what they expect and what they do. I was looking at evidence as well, because I suppose it's one of the reasons that maybe the guidance has sort of taken a back seat and has sort of gone away. It's because evidence is very mixed as well. It's not particularly effective, actually. A lot of homework doesn't seem to make a massive difference to children's outcomes. And I'm saying this as a head, you know, thinking, oh, blimey. And I knew this as well as a head at the time. I thought, I know this isn't always very helpful, but sometimes you felt an obligation to send some out, because sometimes there's a perception that if you don't, somehow you're not bothered anymore.
Yeah.
You're not bothered about the children's learning. And it's difficult to get that perception to change, because homework, as I said earlier, has been around for so many years. It's almost a thing that is just part and parcel of what schools do. But yeah, I mean, I think I've looked at the research, and there's a sort of, if you look at the Education Endowment Fund, if anyone's that interested, but you can look on there and it says that homework had an average effect of about gaining 2 months of progress in a year at best. But that's only if the homework itself was purposeful. So a lot of homework tasks might just be tasks themselves, and that's something we'll talk about, I think, as we go into this discussion. But the evidence isn't that strong that homework really makes much difference, or where it does make a difference, it's a particular type of homework. So the homework has to be linked to what the child's learning already, which may seem obvious, but it doesn't always happen that way.
Agreed.
And it has to build on, and it just has to reinforce what they've learned, I think, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So there's no point just doing an activity that doesn't, for the sake of it. That's where I think as parents you might start questioning what on earth it is that I'm expected to do with my child.
Lisa, what is the point of homework and how is it organised?
Well, after Jason's bit of evidence there about the fact it doesn't have much impact, you might well ask, well, what is the point? I think reflecting on kind of why I set homework as a maths teacher, I know that I primarily wanted students to practice and to consolidate the skills that we'd covered in a lesson, so I'd send them away with questions that covered what had been taught. However, I do know that colleagues in some areas wanted students to prepare for a new topic, perhaps by doing a bit of a preparation task of some sort. And I think the reasoning behind this is that the easier preliminary information can be done independently. And that means then that the contact time that the teacher has with a student can be used for more challenging aspects of that topic, such as analysis and evaluation. So you might find that children are asked to prepare for a forthcoming lesson by reading a piece of work. Some subjects lend themselves better to asking children to read around topics, and that can help develop like a depth of understanding to support any answers that they give. And of course, in secondary school, I can't get away from the fact that a firm favourite is revision. You know, it consolidates and also refreshes learning from earlier on in their school life to make sure that kind of everything is at their fingertips for exam season. And I also personally think that homework can teach a lot of perhaps what I'd call softer skills. And I'm thinking specifically of secondary schools now. But it can help children to learn things such as being organised, managing their time, working to deadlines, how to work independently, and also things like how to access support when they're stuck on something. These are really valuable skills as our young people head into workplaces or they head into further education or even just adult life. You know, a homework planner is almost like a precursor to having your own adult diary and to-do list, isn't it? So that you remember to pay bills on time or you remember to go to an appointment that you booked weeks in advance or whatever. And whilst I do think that homework can help to develop those skills, I really can't stress enough that I am thinking that it needs to be age appropriate and appropriate to an individual child's abilities. You know, I'm not expecting children in year seven to rock up being able to fully manage themselves, their time, their workload and all of that. I'm thinking that over the course of a secondary education, we can help children to make some progress in these areas. That's it. So I'm not sure that's ever really classed as rationale for why you would set homework, but I do think it can support that development over time. And, you know, it's a good place to perhaps help a child become a little bit more organised or aware of competing deadlines or things.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was looking at, reflecting what I'd said earlier as well, and I thought, well, I did paint rather a negative picture of homework. And having said that, there are benefits. I say, if it is practicing and consolidating, it can make a difference. And like you were saying, Lisa, actually, it can help children, even younger children at primary schools, in some other ways, potentially, if it's done well. It does develop some independence, and for younger children, that's still a good thing to be working on. And also for parents, to get to understand where their children are and how they're getting on. And just simple act of reading with them is massively important. And you start to see what they can do. And if they're doing a bit of writing, you see how are they managing to form letters and write words and spell, etc. Yeah. You know, having said that, it depends whether the child can engage. And we know that a lot of them, our children find it much more difficult.
Yeah, definitely. I think you also asked Lee, like, you know, how is it organised?
Yeah.
And well, varies. It won't surprise you. Schools are their own unique little ecosystems. They all do things their own way. But I've worked in a lot of schools that do have like a homework timetable that's issued to staff. Not all schools, but some schools have.
Okay.
And that can dictate how much homework should be set per subject per week or fortnight. And in some cases, it also dictated the day on which it was set. And it does seem like a good idea in many respects, because homework in secondary school can appear quite chaotic just due to the sheer number of teachers and subjects that every child has. So having a timetable does reduce that element of chaos a little bit. But we also have to recognise that the timetable normally fails a few times in reality. You know, it might fail because the teacher's been told to set 20 minutes of homework, but the homework task is going to last only 5 minutes for the most able and 60 minutes for someone who's struggling. So already you've kind of like abandoned the timetable because you've not met your allocated time slot. It might fail just because the teacher is quite disorganised. You know, maybe they're not on top of exactly when they should be setting it and they're a little bit chaotic in themselves. It might be that in the actual lesson that goes ahead on that day, when you were due to set homework, maybe the learning didn't quite go to plan. Maybe the children didn't pick up the skill as quickly as you'd hoped, and therefore the homework you'd planned to set, it actually becomes inaccessible to them, so you can't physically set it. Or maybe the learning took a different direction, you've kind of like followed the passion of the class, and therefore the homework then becomes irrelevant and doesn't match what was taught. It might even be that there was a fire alarm and therefore actually you can't set the homework because you're all standing shivering in the playground. Or maybe one child had a music lesson and missed the homework. That was, you know, children are not great at saying, I have a music lesson, I'm going to miss when you set the homework, please could you let me know it in advance. They generally don't do that.
I wonder why.
I wonder why that would be. So there are a whole host of reasons why this idea of having a timetable might not actually translate into perfect practice week in, week out. So yeah, they're useful but not always perfect, and like I say, each school is you know, has the ability to set their own timetable if they want to, so they may not even have this in place. So yeah, not much clarity on how it's organised, but that just gives you an idea of some of the difficulties in following a plan.
No, I think it gives us a really good kind of picture and a good idea. So thank you. So, Jason, what can I, as an adoptive parent, expect it to look like? Is there a certain format, things that I should be looking for in particular?
Well, as this is, again, one of those things where schools will be very different. But there are some general principles, I think, that you might be able to look out for. I'd say I'm going to go back to this old guidance, because you might find, as a parent, if your school's still following the old guidance, and in their policy it says that what the expectation is, it's interesting to see that this isn't necessarily what has to happen anymore. So it may be useful as a parent to think, actually, if this is too much for my child, it doesn't have to be done anyway. It's a bit of a tricky one, isn't it, challenging schools and their policies and things. But the guidance used to say that children from the age of 4 to 7, so in foundation stage and key stage 1, they have an hour a week, which still sounds a lot if you think about it.
It does.
An hour a week. Which is, if you think about it, over, that's, you know, a bit every night potentially, or a bit of the weekends. You wouldn't do it to sit down with a child for an hour in a block. That's impossible. That would include reading, but even then, that's still quite a lot. And then if you go into key stage 2, so from 7 up to 11, then it's an hour and a half. It's an hour. It's half an hour a day. Sorry, half an hour a day.
Wow.
Again, it's a huge amount of time, isn't it?
It is.
So I suppose it's a good thing they've removed that guidance, because that's a lot of pressure that potentially a lot of people were putting. I think the teachers were reluctant to do it to that degree. And thinking,
definitely.
Oh, God, see, another set of homework. Oh, blimey. The parents thinking, oh, God, not more, another set. The children thinking, oh, do I have to? So actually, who wants to do this? Who are we doing it for? It's quite nice that that's gone. But they might find schools are still sticking to that. They might still think that that's what they have to do. But hopefully they are aware of what the current situation is. So putting that to one side, I'm going to start in sort of the foundation stage in reception. I hope there's no what you would call homework as such set. I hope they don't call it that, because it sounds a bit, you know, that is the play-based learning stage. That's what they should be doing in school. But they might have, schools might be sending home some suggested activities to do at home with your child, which might follow on from what they've been learning at school. So if they're practicing a particular letter sound that week, as part of their phonics, it might be then they can look around for, I don't know, if they're doing the letter P, the P sound, you know, go and look for 5 things that start with that letter around your house. Can you find that? And simple activities, or go in your garden and look and do a bit of a hunt for things, or go and do a bit of counting activity. Those are quite nice activities that don't require and to sit down at a desk and write stuff down, which is not what they should be doing, really. And hopefully some sort of reading activity. And depending on where the child is, again, it should be these books will be set according to the child's reading stage, what they're able to do. And so initially there'll be picture books, and they're perfectly good. Picture books are great for talking about, getting children to understand sequencing. In fact, some children need to actually learn how, where the front cover is and where the back cover is, which page to turn over, and really that very basic level. And there's a lot they can discuss around what they've seen in a picture and talk about a story. And that's very valuable, because that's exactly what they need to do as they begin to learn to read and decode words. So, something like that. Play-based activities should be really what children are expected to do at home, I would hope. Maybe if they can do a little bit of letter formation practice on a sheet, maybe later on in reception, perhaps that might be something. If you want to draw a few pictures or make something, that's okay. Key stage 1, they're still carrying with the reading. Again, hopefully they have structured reading schemes that they're following, but then they might be able to choose another book that they want as well. If all the things you can do at home, I always said to people, do reading. If there's anything you can do at home that's going to help your children, just do some reading with them. Yeah. That's probably more valuable than anything else. Even if that means sitting with them and reading, because they won't want to say it out loud, you know, for example. And we'll come to tips later, won't we?
Yeah.
There's often a lot of phonics-related work. There may well be some phonics-related things, because children in year 1 are going to be doing a phonics screener, so the school might be thinking of sending some work home that supports their phonics again. There may be some topic work. This is where schools try to be creative and think, well, where can we make the homework a bit more interesting? So sometimes it's about going to do a bit of research, find out something, or it might be to make models of things, bring them into school, which can be great fun. However, There's a times when that, and I've had parents come to me and say this before, and I'm having experienced it as well as a parent. You can sometimes be homework for the parents because
I was just thinking when you were saying that.
You have to get all this stuff together: boxes, cardboard, sellotape, glue, scissors, and things. And by the time you've done 80% of it, sometimes, I mean, that's not always fair, but you know, it can feel like that sometimes.
My daughter's moving into that stage, and I'm not sure I'm prepared for it, to be honest. I need more crafts.
But schools would much rather you did send something home that was genuinely the child's. If it's a bit wonky, lopsided, and falling to bits, that's if it's theirs, that's better than something that's beautiful, pristine, some
that's
beautiful silver painted, you know, some beautiful castle that looks well, that looks got, you know, a winding drawbridge or something like that, and working and a little moat. Well, that's brilliant, but I don't suppose they made that. You know, maybe someone's got a nice workshop in the garage. But but yeah, I'd always say in terms of a parent. It just let them do what they can and don't worry about it. And take in what they've made. It's absolutely fine. It'll be valuable. It'll be valued. It's not a competition. It sometimes can feel like that. So that's key stage one. Key stage two, it just ramp generally, again, if they're following this kind of pattern, it will just ramp up from key stage one. So they'll still carry on the reading. At that stage, of course, your children might not need you to sit and read with them if they're capable, if they're quite fluent. It's more a case of checking in on what they've read now and again, talking about what they've read, see if they can answer a few questions and see if they can offer opinions about it. But you quite typically find schools sending over a piece of math or some sort of English as well on a weekly basis. And it's usually a week that they get given, or possibly a Monday to Friday, but usually they're given the weekend as well. Or again, there could be a topic task. It still could be a making or researching activity as well. So try and vary it a little. And a lot of sometimes schools have homework books that the work goes in and gets sent home in their book bag and then goes back to school, back and forth, and then they lose it and then you have to get a new one. And all that lovely work's gone somewhere. No one knows where it's gone forever. But yeah, it can ramp up. And again, towards year four, there'll probably be an emphasis on multiplication tables because they've got a multiplication check coming up. And then in year six, there'll probably be an emphasis on some of the skills they need for their key stage two SATs. It becomes a bit SATs heavy. You just get past into the spring term towards May. And that can be quite an onerous thing for children to be managing as well at that stage.
I think at secondary level, I really need to steer clear of what homework could look like, because with just the sheer volume of subjects, if you try and think about what a music homework would look like, or, you know, a construction work homework would look like, and then you compare it to your maths homework, you know, it is completely different. But I did spend a little bit of time having a look at kind of what schools were saying they were setting in terms of time. And I found it, well, frightening, to be honest, genuinely frightening. There's so much contradictory advice out there, or contradictory kind of policies that schools have put in place, with some people saying, you know, they're expecting children in year 7 and 8 to be doing 1.5 to 2 hours homework a day.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, these children are 11, 12, 13 years old, and we're sending them for a 6-hour school day. They've got the travel time to add in, and then we want them to do 2 hours of homework a night. I think that's ridiculous. And then they were ramping it up to 4 hours a night in years 10 and 11. So we're talking, again, a 6-hour day with 4 hours of homework. That's a 10-hour working day for a 15, 16-year-old. I just thought that was ludicrous myself. I don't like doing 10-hour working days, so why am I, you know, why would I be expecting a child to be doing that?
And I think to add to that, Lisa, as well, is, you know, we know that our adopted children often really mask for a lot of the school day, containing a lot of really big and difficult feelings, so they're exhausted from that, to then come home and have another shift technically to do with homework. It's a really, really big ask of our children.
And where do they find time for extracurricular activities and the things that they enjoy and that they're passionate about? Yeah. You know, I really think this is doing them a disservice if people are expecting that much of them. And I would, if my daughter was to go to a school that expected that, I would be advocating for it and just saying, no, that is unreasonable. There was something called a 10-minute rule, which I like a little bit more, actually. And that says that you take your child's year group and you multiply it by 10. And then that gives you an idea of the maximum amount of time they should spend doing it.
Okay.
So if they're in year 7, that would be 70 minutes. So an hour and 10. And that is still a lot, I think, for 11 or 12-year-old. But remember, it was a maximum. And again, it does ramp up to 2 hours for someone who's perhaps in year 12, but you are talking about, you know, doing A levels at that point. So, you know, perhaps we can expect there to be a little bit more work at that age. So, yeah, it's difficult. One thing I would say is if you do find that a school's expectations of the time that children should be spent doing homework, if that frightens you, if you don't agree with it, do advocate on behalf of your child. But also recognise that in an international survey that was recently conducted, it was found that British secondary school aged children actually do on average less than 5 hours homework a week. So there is actually a kind of a dissonance between what people are saying they expect and what they're going to be setting and actually how that translates into reality. So sometimes these figures do look a bit frightening and it's worth putting your foot down and being vocal if you think it's too much. But what they're saying might not actually translate into what actually happens anyway. For all those reasons I stated before of you know, homework timetables just don't always go to plan. So.
I can imagine. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? That difference between what's published and what they actually do. Interesting.
I do think when choosing a school, and I know that's something that we're going to have a podcast on, you know, in the future, but I do think when choosing a school, some parents do look to the homework policy and that extracurricular provision as a reason why they choose their school, especially at secondary age. And that might account for why schools feel the need to put, you know, a large number of hours out there. But
maybe it seems a badge of honour, perhaps, or a sign of high expectations. I don't know.
Yeah, high expectations, yeah.
But I agree. I think the bottom line for a lot of our children is that if they can get through a school day in one piece without having too much of a traumatic time or too many scrapes, then they've done incredibly well. And so they'll be more exhausted than typically most children will be at the end of the day. So it isn't, you know, it isn't unreasonable to expect those children not to be able to manage very much at home. And actually what we want to do is conserve their energy so that they can keep enough energy to manage a day at school. And so if that means not doing very much at home, then great, because the things we can do at home are still valuable. They don't have to be the sitting down homework stuff. There's a lot of valuable stuff we can do. I'm sure parents don't need any of us to tell them how to do that, because they know exactly how to do the right thing for their children. But it's definitely important to be able to say, no, this isn't right. My child's had enough. They've had a difficult day, just being themselves, just trying to cope with everything. And actually, as you said before, Lisa, about homework, that lack of ability to go to clubs and things. And for a lot of our children, is their social development is the thing that they really need more than anything else. Social and emotional development is the thing that they probably have the biggest need in.
Just picking up on what you said there, Jason and Lisa, about advocating for our children, and if this isn't right, saying that this isn't right. In your experiences, how do schools receive that? How is the best way to have that conversation?
Well, I have actually done that a couple of times. I've just written in the homework book, we had a go at this. It was just too tired. He wasn't capable. But we've done something else instead. And that's all right, thanks. And that's it, really. And I don't expect them to come back and say, well, no, that's not good, because they're not going to. They realise. And actually, the school were great. I'm not saying they were always very supportive. And they understood. So it's just a case of making a little note, I suppose, and just letting them know that it was just a bit much. And if they're sending home a regular basis of something that your child just can't manage, then it's worth saying, please, could we do something that's more suitable? Because it is difficult. You know, teachers are not going to be able to send home personalised homework to 30 children at 17 different levels. You know, it's just not manageable. So we've got to be careful what we can reasonably expect to ask them to provide. So, because there'll be other children in the class with additional needs that could also have potentially different homework sent to them. So it is difficult for them, for the teachers. But back to the question, I think just make them aware that they struggled. And if you don't want to put it in the homework book, because the child might not be embarrassed if you put, you know, our child is in reception, he wasn't bothered about what we wrote at that stage. But an older child might not want you to write something in their book that everyone can see, because that might seem like a bit embarrassing, a bit shameful. So you need to do it a different way, perhaps send a message to the school through whether we've got an email system or like Class Dojo or whatever. They've got these sometimes have communication platforms that they use. So there's other ways of getting in touch with them and letting them know.
Yeah, I'd 100% back that up in my experience in secondaries is, you know, a note in the homework plan or the homework diary is absolutely sufficient. I just smiled to myself a little bit, you know, when you say what's the best way to communicate is please not angrily, because I haven't deliberately set your child something that they couldn't do. I've got it wrong. Hands up, I've got it wrong. I'm really sorry, but please be nice about it. But yeah, just as Jason said, a little note that just said they had a go. They found it really tough. You know, we drew a line under it. There is what there is, and that's fine. You know, a teacher is not going to come back and say, actually, it's coming home again and you will do it until it is complete. They're not going to say that. You know, what's become evident from that is actually this child has struggled with this particular task, and therefore perhaps they don't have the understanding to access it. And therefore, as a teacher, what I need to do is kind of revisit that with them and strengthen their understanding. So we learn from being told that they can't do it, you know, that there is learning going on there, and it means that something we put in place to help them and support them. So yeah, just a quick note in the homework diary is absolutely fine. Okay.
And you're confirming that teachers definitely don't set homework just to frustrate or annoy parents.
Not deliberately.
There you go. You've heard it here first. So, Lisa, bearing in mind what we've said about homework and our children, what as parents can we do to help?
Okay, so strictly from a secondary perspective, and Jason may not think that they apply to primary so much, but I did manage to draw out just seven things, just seven things just that seven. We can do to help. Just seven. But, you know, it might be worth, you know, if your child does struggle to organise themselves, it might be worth trying to get hold of a homework timetable if there is one. Okay, this is often glued in the front of their planner. It might be available on the website. But if you do want to contact the school because you can't seem to find anything, then maybe a head of year is the best person to contact, because they're going to have the overview of what a child in that year group is expected to do. So a quick email just to say, can I have a copy of the homework timetable? Or if they haven't got one, can you just let me know what the expectations are? And then that way you know what you're expecting to see at home. The second thing I'd say is that it's useful to talk to your children about how they record homework in their planner, because they're going to be having information coming from lots of different people for lots of different subjects. So it's just worth kind of sitting down with them and saying, right, when we write it down, it's useful to put the subject, the teacher, when it's due in, and the details of the task. And, you know, some children do pick that up very quickly, but some children need that reiterating to them. And that's okay. You might want to write some prompts in the front so each time they can look at what they're supposed to be writing down. And that will help them, but it will also help you if they come to you for help with anything. And you might want to consider buying them a little plastic wallet or something that they can put homework sheets in, just to stop them getting lost in bags. That's quite a good one. sorry, I've got a bit of a cough. If your child really struggles with organisation, it might mean that you need to help them by checking their planner with them, so you can see what needs doing and help them to prioritise, because children are not very good at prioritising. They tend to go with what they want to do and what they enjoy doing, and then that can lead to a build-up, and you might find that you've got two pieces due in for tomorrow. It's 9 o'clock at night. We're having an absolute stress and a meltdown at home because, you know, the child's feeling uncomfortable. They know that they haven't met the deadlines and tomorrow at school might be difficult for them. And all this can be avoided if we've kind of helped them prioritise maybe a little bit earlier on in the week. So that might be something that we need to do with them. Starting things early, as well as avoiding that kind of like meltdown phase, it also means they've got time to ask for help in school if they need it. So, you know, if they've tried to do it and they can't do it, they can come and ask for a little bit of help, go to a homework club at lunchtime maybe and get some support there. When we think about actually doing homework at home, it's really good if we can kind of ensure there is a quiet place for our children to settle down and do work. I know that's not always possible in a busy household, but just like a dedicated place where they know that they can get their things out and work. And be able to focus. And thinking about focus, we need to be aware of the distraction of electronic devices like TVs and phones. Recently, I've worked with 17, 18 year olds, and it's amazing how much they thought they'd worked. And then actually, when we dug into it, they were on social media for an hour and a half with their books open. And we have to have quite big conversations about that. Isn't an hour and a half of work. That is actually an hour and a half of social media. So yeah, just be aware of electronic distractions. You know, Googling and asking friends for help is a good source of support, but it's not. It's not always meaning that they're making good progress. I've lost count on what number point I'm on now, but I'd also recommend just being available for your child. And that doesn't mean that you have to do the homework with them. If you feel that you can help when they're stuck, that's brilliant. But don't worry if you can't. You know, teachers are not expecting parents to be experts in all areas of the curriculum. It's okay to sit down with them and say, gosh, this is really tough. You know, I understand that you're frustrated with it. I'm frustrated with it. I find it really hard as well. So let's think what we can do to get unstuck. So, you know, you don't ever put yourself under the pressure to have the answers. You know, it's okay just to sit and really kind of accept how they're feeling about it and kind of let them realize that it's okay to find it hard if they are. And be aware of some of those messages that you're passing on. I can remember very distinctly one child saying to me, I can't do maths because we don't like it in my family. No one likes it. No one does it. And therefore, I won't ever be able to do it. And I'm sure no one actually said that to her. But it's obviously a message that she'd picked up on, which meant that she wasn't engaging. So, yeah, just be available. And you know, you can empathize with them and support them, but try to remain positive. Do advocate for your child. If there is too much homework at any one time or in general, communicate it. You know, if you've helped them prioritize, which means they're going to meet one deadline but miss another, communicate it. You know, we don't want to imagine our children sitting and struggling. You know, a teacher doesn't want to imagine the child sitting and struggling. So just communicate it and advocate for them. And finally, if it is too much, just stop. You know, it is not a statutory requirement. It is okay that if your child is struggling with the school day, if their social, emotional and development has to take priority, and, you know, if their mental health is being impacted by constant battles, if family dynamics are being damaged because of these constant battles, if they're going through a really, really bad patch and this is just not helping, then stop it. You know, it is okay and you are within your rights as a parent. You know, communicate it, communicate the reasons why. Don't say we're never going to do homework ever, ever, ever again, but just say right now it is not helping and I need to protect my child and support them. So we won't be doing anything for the next 4 weeks and we'll reevaluate it then, you know. And those conversations had with schools will be powerful and they will be met with understanding. And, you know, they want to work with you to support your child through school. So let them know the best way to do it. All right. So I'm not sure if that was 7 points or a whole load more, but hopefully there are some useful tips in there for people who are perhaps having battles with secondary school homework at the moment.
Jason, do you have any other top tips that we can take away?
Well, from a primary perspective, I was looking at my list thinking, oh, have I got 7 things as well? I might have 8. Ooh. Does that mean I win a prize? Well, I think some of the things I've said, not surprisingly, will be the same as what Lisa said, because they're going to be very similar, aren't they? From younger children, I was going to say, the first thing I thought was that what I find works for our children particularly is that do it in small snippets. And for one of my children, it was 5 minutes was a really good session. If you could do 5 minutes of one activity, you know, a child with ADHD, for example, as he did, that was a struggle. So, but he still wanted to do something. So it was interesting. He wanted to do something because we made it like a game. If we could, that's what happens when you get teachers in you, as you but you know, we tried to make a learning thing like a game, so like a phonics game, for example, rather than sitting and writing. So he'd want to do that, but couldn't do for long, and you could see it was just enough. And then right, let's go. And since I wasn't sat down, it was stood, sort of jiggling around on the, stood around the floor, saying it or putting cards down on, and it was, it'd be fine. It'd be quite frantic, but it would be purposeful, and that's enough. Brilliant, done. Enough, and then a little bit. If you do another minute, another day, another minute. By the time you accumulate quite a few minutes of something that actually is quite useful, you know, rather than a sit down battle, which is the thing we're always, we hear, I think, constantly saying is not worth doing. I did say, yeah, absolutely. If you can possibly find a space that's quiet and free from distractions, that's great. And a time of day. I had visions at one point of, oh, we'll have a desk, we'll use the dining table or something like that. That didn't work. What ended up happening was bath time, just after bath time.
Wow.
And one of them actually wants to do some counting and or math in the bath.
Wow.
Which is interesting. Well, he's just saying, well, let's do it. Let's just go along with that.
Yeah, sounds perfect.
And then, so actually, a quiet place was his bedroom. One of the boys was a quiet place in his bedroom, because his brother wasn't around causing mayhem, or he wasn't distracted by other stuff, and he just wanted to. And it's a nice bit of one-to-one time you could do, and we tried to get not to put the pressure on and do a little bit of reading, a bit of a game.
It was just funny you saying about bath time, and actually the time where I do the most kind of like educational input with my daughter is actually in the car, because we will count things that we, and she is quite young, so we are still at very kind of like basic concepts, but you know, she's in her car seat and I'm in the front seat and we've got a long journey to do, and we just count things or we look for things beginning with certain sounds. And yeah, you can squeeze it into anything. It, you know, definitely doesn't have to be sat at desk when they're when they're young, does it?
Certainly not. So sometimes just taking a most of an opportunity that just happens naturally, don't you? So yeah, so sometimes a set time of day is a great thing. If you know there's a certain time, if your child benefits from that routine and you know, outright, when this is done, we always do that. So when we do the cognitive homework, that's fine. It can work, but for some children it doesn't. So you have to be a bit more flexible. As I say, we just sort of came to that bath time thing almost through sort of just trial and error. And that kind of worked for us. Sometimes I think when it's a bit of a battle, you can try a sort of, I do a bit, you do a bit. And that sometimes helps. I found that worked. And that can be the same for reading. That's, well, I'll read this page, you can read it with me, and then you only have a go at that bit. Or I'll read those words, you read that bit, and see if they can have a go. And that might be enough. And or if it's a bit of, or any activity, you can say, I'll do this bit, can you do that bit? And see if they can. If they don't worry, don't labour it, don't make a big thing of it, don't stress over it. I'd say that if you can't get your children to do these tasks, as we just said, I think the most important thing is if you're having good quality conversations with your children, you're going outdoors, you're taking them to the places, having experiences, that's going to be really valuable. It's really valuable stuff. So it's not worth sweating over too much. I mean, if they don't finish this worksheet, is their life going to be that different? You know what I mean? It comes down to it. If that worksheet doesn't get done, is my child going to be suffering? No, of course they're not. Yeah, phonics and games, things like that, cards. If you can do them that way, that's always better. If you see an activity that they're sent home at a primary level, and if it's a worksheet-based thing and you're thinking, I don't think they're going to sit and write it, can you make it into a game instead? Can you use some post-it notes to write some numbers on and move them around and play with them? Or use playing cards or dice or, you know, dominoes instead? Or, you know, use a tablet, and there's loads of maths games. Perhaps we could put a few links on this bottom of this podcast, you know, so some links to websites. Well, there's a lot of schools provide them, of sites that have games they can play. You know, BBC Bite Size are great, things like that. Always praise your child for any effort. And I think the real thing is the effort. Don't worry about the activity, the outcome, the quality of the stuff they're doing. It's the effort you're trying to praise for, because that's the thing that will ultimately develop their self-esteem. Not about the quality of the questions, how many they got right. Lovely homework. I mean, it can be if they've done a great job, but it's just how much effort they've put and how much care they've taken. And if they've had a go for a minute, well done, you've really done well. That must have been really tricky. I know you find it hard today, but look at that. You managed a whole minute. That's amazing. Well done. You know, celebrate it. I think, so in terms of like a top tips we were saying earlier, I think the bottom line, as we said, like Lisa said, if your child's not coping, just stop. If they're not gaining anything, you're not gaining anything apart from stress. And you're just going to get angry and frustrated and start saying things you don't want to say. It's not worth it at all. But then communication is really important. I say, they said that about letting the school know. Just let them know that it's just not working for your child. It's not appropriate. It's not helping them. Not that you're not supporting. Of course you are. But you're just saying it's not going to work. So please understand this is what we're going to try and do. Or we're not going to be able to take part in the homework for a while. These are the reasons why. And so hopefully they'll work with you on that way. rather than, you know, getting too angry and waiting to get frustrated.
Can I just add in, I'm like backtracking a little bit. I mean, I agree wholeheartedly with everything you said, Jason, but just when you were talking about games or, you know, writing on post-it notes or using a tablet, I'd forgotten actually, but it's quite a common thing that sometimes children are reluctant to engage with work in general or homework, because when something is committed to paper, it's very concrete, and they worry about making a mistake, they worry about it being wrong. And so, you know, if you're able to have like a little whiteboard or a little chalkboard, you know, some children's, they have like these easels, don't they, with a blackboard on one side or what, you know, it's okay to do the homework on a different surface, something that they find easier to engage with. The beauty of a wipe clean board is that if there is a mistake, you can rub it out and start again, and you haven't committed an error to paper. And yeah, it just reminds me that a lot of secondary school age children don't want to start something because they're worried about getting it wrong and there being that evidence. Mm-hmm. And if you just change it to a different medium, that evidence is gone then, and they find it easier to engage with. So yeah. No, I liked your idea about changing it up. You know, if you're given a worksheet, change the medium and they might find it easier to engage with. So.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it is about feeling judged, isn't it? And the children are often feeling conscious about the fact that they perhaps don't feel as confident as other children in class. They know that. They may know that they're not coping with some of the work as well as others. And obviously some of our children work really well and cope brilliantly. I'm not saying that's the case for all of them, but we know some, quite often they don't. And if they don't, you're absolutely right. Other ways of doing it are just effective. In fact, that reminded me that we did actually get one of those dry whiteboards, you know, with the pens.
Yeah.
And that was quite handy. And then, you know, sometimes he just did some letters. He was practicing some letter formation one evening, and then we just took a quick photo on the phone and said, and we were able to email that to the teacher and say, look, just done this. That wasn't the homework set, but it was still useful and still valuable. So actually, they could have a conversation in school.
Consolidation, yeah.
Yes, it meant in school, oh, well, I saw this picture you did. Well done, that was really amazing writing you did. And so it's just that positivity again, trying to boost all the time and make it feel like it's worthwhile.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode, and be sure to look out for our next episode, Behaviour Management, coming soon, along with other topics such as transitions in the school day, triggers, and choosing a school.